University of Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Session, 2013. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the test. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the test. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the test. Look at questions 1 to 6. For each question, you will hear the situation described as it is on your exam paper. You will hear each item twice. Questions 1 to 6. For questions 1 to 6, you will hear a series of short sentences. Answer each question on the line provided. Your answers should be as brief as possible. You will hear each item twice. Question 1. At what time does the supermarket close on Mondays?
Good morning. This is Freetown Supermarket. How can I help?
I'm just calling to ask what your opening hours are.
We are open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day except Wednesday. On Wednesdays we stay open late, until 10 p.m.
Okay, thanks.
Good morning. This is Freetown Supermarket. How can I help?
I'm just calling to ask what your opening hours are.
We are open from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. every day except Wednesday. On Wednesdays we stay open late, until 10 p.m.
Okay, thanks.
Question 2. What two things is Roxy Moon going to do on the radio show?
Well, here's a treat for all you rock music fans out there. Today on the show, we have the amazing Roxy Moon. She's here in the studio, and later on, she is going to do an interview, then sing for us live on air. Meanwhile, here is a 1980s dance track from Paul... Well, here's a treat for all you rock music fans out there. Today on the show, we have the amazing Roxy Moon. She's here in the studio, and later on, she is going to do an interview, then sing for us live on air. Meanwhile, here is a 1980s dance track from Paul...
Question 3. What does Anika want to eat for her lunch? And why has she chosen this?
If you sit there, Anika, I'll go and buy our lunch. What would you like?
A chicken salad, please, Jan. Oh, and a bottle of fizzy water to drink.
That doesn't sound very much. Would you like any bread and butter or chips with that?
No, thanks. I'm trying to eat a healthy diet.
If you sit there, Anika, I'll go and buy our lunch. What would you like?
A chicken salad, please, Jan. Oh, and a bottle of fizzy water to drink.
That doesn't sound very much. Would you like any bread and butter or chips with that?
No, thanks. I'm trying to eat a healthy diet.
Question 4. Where must the passengers go so they can get on their plane?
This is an announcement for passengers travelling on the delayed 10 o'clock flight to New York. The plane is now ready to leave. Please make your way to gate 11 and have your passports ready. We apologise for the 2-hour delay and wish you a pleasant flight. This is an announcement for passengers travelling on the delayed 10 o'clock flight to New York. The plane is now ready to leave. Please make your way to gate 11 and have your passports ready. We apologise for the 2-hour delay and wish you a pleasant flight.
Question 5. What after-school activity does Lee decide he would like to do?
Look at all the after-school clubs and activities we could join this year, Lee.
Judo, football, tennis, swimming. But is there anything for people like me who aren't very sporty?
Yes, look. Jazz band, art classes, drama.
Stop right there. I like art, but that last one's for me. I love plays, and it would be fun to act them out on stage. You could come too.
Look at all the after-school clubs and activities we could join this year, Lee.
Judo, football, tennis, swimming. But is there anything for people like me who aren't very sporty?
Yes, look. Jazz band, art classes, drama.
Stop right there. I like art, but that last one's for me. I love plays, and it would be fun to act them out on stage. You could come too.
Question 6. What is wrong with the car's air conditioning? Give 2 details.
Hello there, I've come to collect my car. Were you able to fix the problem with the brakes?
Yes, they're fine now. But unfortunately, we found a problem with the air conditioning. It's blowing out hot air, and the switch is broken, so we can't turn it off.
Oh, no. It was working fine when I brought the car in.
We'll fix it free of charge. It'll be ready for you tomorrow morning.
Hello there. I've come to collect my car. Were you able to fix the problem with the brakes?
Yes, they're fine now. But unfortunately, we found a problem with the air conditioning. It's blowing out hot air, and the switch is broken, so we can't turn it off.
Oh, no. It was working fine when I brought the car in.
We'll fix it free of charge. It'll be ready for you tomorrow morning.
That is the last of questions 1 to 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. Listen to the following talk by a man who works as an ice cream taster, and then complete the details below. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for inviting me to take part in your careers session today. My job is quite unusual. There are very few jobs in the world like it, but perhaps my talk may open your minds to the possibility of taking up a career in the food industry. You see, I'm an ice cream taster. Yes, I get paid to eat ice cream every day. In fact, over the years, I've tasted more than 810 million litres of ice cream. It's enough to give anyone indigestion. As an ice cream taster, I have to taste, then either approve or reject every flavour of ice cream the company makes every day. To make sure I only taste the ice cream and not the aftertaste of the plastic or metal of a spoon, I have to use a special spoon made of real gold. I try 3 cartons of ice cream from each batch, sampling from the beginning, the middle, and the end of the production process. The ice cream has to be of a consistent standard for our customers, so I have to check the flavour. I also check that the added ingredients are properly mixed in. For example, in toffee swirl ice cream, I check that the toffee sauce is evenly mixed and swirled throughout the carton. It sounds like a fun job, but it's not all fun and games. We're in the business of making premium ice cream. That is, the very, very best. So the quality of the ice cream has to be exceptional. My job is a highly responsible one. The company and all the workers in the factory depend on me to keep standards high. I also have to take care of my own sense of taste. The company takes this seriously and has insured my taste buds for $1 million. I mustn't eat spicy food, and I'm not allowed to use perfumed soap or aftershave lotion, anything which might affect my tasting abilities. My family has worked in the ice cream industry for generations. When I was growing up, I worked in my uncle's ice cream factory, and it was there that I began perfecting my taste buds for ice cream. But nowadays, there are many universities that offer a food science course that would provide a path towards becoming an ice cream taster, if you're inspired by my story. Any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thank you for inviting me to take part in your careers session today. My job is quite unusual. There are very few jobs in the world like it, but perhaps my talk may open your minds to the possibility of taking up a career in the food industry. You see, I'm an ice cream taster. Yes, I get paid to eat ice cream every day. In fact, over the years, I've tasted more than 810 million litres of ice cream. It's enough to give anyone indigestion. As an ice cream taster, I have to taste, then either approve or reject every flavour of ice cream the company makes every day. To make sure I only taste the ice cream and not the aftertaste of the plastic or metal of a spoon, I have to use a special spoon made of real gold. I try 3 cartons of ice cream from each batch, sampling from the beginning, the middle, and the end of the production process. The ice cream has to be of a consistent standard for our customers, so I have to check the flavour. I also check that the added ingredients are properly mixed in. For example, in toffee swirl ice cream, I check that the toffee sauce is evenly mixed and swirled throughout the carton. It sounds like a fun job, but it's not all fun and games. We're in the business of making premium ice cream. That is, the very, very best. So the quality of the ice cream has to be exceptional. My job is a highly responsible one. The company
and all the workers in the factory depend on me to keep standards high.
I also have to take care of my own sense of taste. The company takes this seriously and has insured my taste buds for $1 million. I mustn't eat spicy food, and I'm not allowed to use perfumed soap or aftershave lotion, anything which might affect my tasting abilities. My family has worked in the ice cream industry for generations. When I was growing up, I worked in my uncle's ice cream factory, and it was there that I began perfecting my taste buds for ice cream. But nowadays, there are many universities that offer a food science course that would provide a path towards becoming an ice cream taster, if you're inspired by my story. Any questions?
That is the end of question 7. In a moment you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8. Listen to the following interview with a man who makes sculptures out of butter, and then complete the details below. You will hear the interview twice.
Good afternoon, Mr. Randeev. I'm a reporter from the Evening News. I wonder, do you have time to tell me about your work?
Yes, I'd be very happy to. I love making models of people and things.
Well, I've seen sculptures made out of wood or stone before, but never out of butter.
Yes, I used to work mostly with wood, but I wanted to try something new.
I must say how impressed I am to see what you've made. This is a fascinating exhibition.
Well, thank you.
Many people use butter every day to spread on their bread or to put on vegetables or to cook with. We're used to eating it, but who would have thought it possible to use it to make works of art?
I know. A lot of people are surprised when they see what I've made.
I just love this model of a car. It's old-fashioned, about 500 centimetres long, and open-topped, with four people sitting in it. The detail that you've been able to carve into the butter is amazing. The lady's hat has got tiny flowers on it. The man is wearing glasses. Oh, the car's wheels are perfect. You've even included the spokes on the wheels. However did you do it?
Well, making butter sculptures requires a lot of patience and concentration. They take a very long time to make. The car took nearly 90 hours, because the inside and the underside are all detailed. If you breathe while you're carving, it moves your hand. You can't do that, as butter is difficult to work with. So, I take a deep breath and hold it. Do what I have to do, then lean back and breathe out. It's a slow process.
I can imagine. The sculpture looks as though it could melt at any moment.
That's because it could, if it got too warm. The secret is to use the right type of butter. I prefer the kind of butter used to make pastry. It melts at a higher temperature, so it's easier to work with. I also have to wash my hands in ice-cold water every now and then, so that my fingers don't get too warm and spoil the sculpture.
I hear that you've won prizes for your work.
That's right, I have. In London last month, I won two gold medals and a silver medal at an international competition.
What happens to the sculptures after you've made them?
They can stand on display for years if they are kept cool enough. I created a sailing ship for a hotel in Kenya several years ago, and I think it's still there.
Well, thank you for your time. It's been really interesting. My article will be in tomorrow's paper.
Great. So soon. Well, I'll look out for it.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Good afternoon, Mr. Randeev. I'm a reporter from the Evening News. I wonder, do you have time to tell me about your work?
Yes, I'd be very happy to. I love making models of people and things.
Well, I've seen sculptures made out of wood or stone before, but never out of butter.
Yes, I used to work mostly with wood, but I wanted to try something new.
I must say how impressed I am to see what you've made. This is a fascinating exhibition.
Well, thank you.
Many people use butter every day to spread on their bread or to put on vegetables or to cook with. We're used to eating it, but who would have thought it possible to use it to make works of art?
I know. A lot of people are surprised when they see what I've made.
I just love this model of a car. It's old-fashioned, about 500 centimetres long, and open-topped, with four people sitting in it. The detail that you've been able to carve into the butter is amazing. The lady's hat has got tiny flowers on it. The man is wearing glasses. Oh, the car's wheels are perfect. You've even included the spokes on the wheels. However did you do it?
Well, making butter sculptures requires a lot of patience and concentration. They take a very long time to make. The car took nearly 90 hours because the inside and the underside are all detailed. If you breathe while you're carving, it moves your hand. You can't do that, as butter is difficult to work with. So, I take a deep breath and hold it. Do what I have to do, then lean back and breathe out. It's a slow process.
I can imagine. The sculpture looks as though it could melt at any moment.
That's because it could, if it got too warm. The secret is to use the right type of butter. I prefer the kind of butter used to make pastry. It melts at a higher temperature, so it's easier to work with. I also have to wash my hands in ice-cold water every now and then, so that my fingers don't get too warm and spoil the sculpture.
I hear that you've won prizes for your work.
That's right, I have. In London last month, I won 2 gold medals and a silver medal at an international competition.
What happens to the sculptures after you've made them?
They can stand on display for years if they are kept cool enough. I created a sailing ship for a hotel in Kenya several years ago, and I think it's still there.
Well, thank you for your time. It's been really interesting. My article will be in tomorrow's paper.
Great. So soon. Well, I'll look out for it.
That is the end of question 8. In a moment you will hear question 9. now look at the questions for this part of the exam.
You'll hear part of a recorded guided tour which is given to people visiting a wildlife park. For questions 9 to 18, complete the sentences. You now have 45 seconds in which to look at part 2. Welcome to Burton Safari Park. This cassette has been made so that you can listen to a guided tour as you drive round the wildlife park in your car. Burton is one of Europe's oldest wildlife parks. Here you can see wild animals from all over the world, and they're not in cages. Before we start, we do have some information for the animal's safety and for your own. First, please stay in your car at all times. In case of emergency or breakdown, please use your horn and lights and a ranger will come and help you. If you'd like to stop, please do so on the left side of the road, allowing traffic to pass on the right. Please do not feed the animals. Our animals are fed on special diets, and your leftover picnic might make them ill or even kill them. We're starting our tour with some of Burton's most interesting wild animals, our four white rhinos from South Africa. The white rhino doesn't get its name from its colour. The African word white means wide, and the white rhino has a wide mouth which helps it eat grasses. Sadly, there aren't many rhinos left in the world today. Poachers hunt rhinos for their horns, which can be made into things like handles for knives. Burton's oldest animals are two female rhinos, Maggot and Mary. They've been here since the park opened 30 years ago. They're great friends and could live to be 40. Head keeper Anne Stewart has worked with rhinos and other large animals at Burton for 20 years.
Rhinos can be dangerous. These ones here have been here a long time, so they know me and I know them. Their hearing's excellent, but their eyesight is poor, so it's important that I talk, and then they recognise my voice and they're okay with me.
Anne has noticed how intelligent the rhinos are. They can tell the vet's Volvo car from any other Volvo, and become suspicious if a car is not going round the normal route.
One of the keepers has a special but dangerous job, checking the rhino's toes. There are three toes on each foot, and they have to be checked regularly in case they get damaged. There are two male rhinos, Harold and Arthur, who came to Burton from the north of England. Harold, in particular, can get quite angry at times. Their keeper says sometimes rhinos might want to have a little rub on the side of your car. It's because it's a convenient place to scratch themselves, but it's nothing to worry about, really. Just drive out of the way and keep clear of them if they look as though they're going to use your car in this way. If you can't move, sound the horn and someone will come and rescue you.
White rhinos spend most of their time eating when they're not sleeping or taking a mud bath. The rhino's diet is mostly grass and sugar. The keepers make a special mixture for them, which they seem to enjoy very much. They have a good life, really. And now, let's move on to the other side of the...
Now you'll hear part two again.
Welcome to Burton Safari Park. This cassette has been made so that you can listen to a guided tour as you drive round the wildlife park in your car. Burton is one of Europe's oldest wildlife parks. Here you can see wild animals from all over the world, and they're not in cages. Before we start, we do have some information for the animal's safety and for your own. First, please stay in your car at all times. In case of emergency or breakdown, please use your horn and lights and a ranger will come and help you. If you'd like to stop, please do so on the left side of the road, allowing traffic to pass on the right. Please do not feed the animals. Our animals are fed on special diets, and your leftover picnic might make them ill or even kill them. We're starting our tour with some of Burton's most interesting wild animals. Our four white rhinos from South Africa. The white rhino doesn't get its name from its colour. The African word white means wide, and the white rhino has a wide mouth, which helps it eat grasses. Sadly, there aren't many rhinos left in the world today. Poachers hunt rhinos for their horns, which can be made into things like handles for knives. Burton's oldest animals are two female rhinos, Maggot and Mary. They've been here since the park opened 30 years ago. They're great friends and could live to be 40. Head keeper Anne Stewart has worked with rhinos and other large animals at Burton for 20 years.
Rhinos can be dangerous. These ones here have been here a long time, so they know me and I know them. Their hearing's excellent, but their eyesight is poor, so it's important that I talk, and then they recognise my voice and they're okay with me.
Anne has noticed how intelligent the rhinos are. They can tell the vet's Volvo car from any other Volvo and become suspicious if a car is not going round the normal route.
One of the keepers has a special but dangerous job, checking the rhino's toes. There are three toes on each foot, and they have to be checked regularly in case they get damaged. There are two male rhinos, Harold and Arthur, who came to Burton from the north of England. Harold, in particular, can get quite angry at times. Their keeper says sometimes rhinos might want to have a little rub on the side of your car. It's because it's a convenient place to scratch themselves, but it's nothing to worry about, really. Just drive out of the way and keep clear of them if they look as though they're going to use your car in this way. If you can't move, sound the horn and someone will come and rescue you.
White rhinos spend most of their time eating when they're not sleeping or taking a mud bath. The rhino's diet is mostly grass and sugar. The keepers make a special mixture for them, which they seem to enjoy very much. They have a good life, really. And now, let's move on to the other side of the...
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. You'll hear five careers advisers talking to young people who are preparing for their first interview for a job. For questions 19 to 23, choose from the list A to F which piece of advice each speaker gives. Use the letters only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You now have 30 seconds in which to look at part three. Speaker 1.
When the company invites you to attend an interview, it means that the company is interested in you because they've looked at all the information you've given them about yourself and they probably think you've got a number of strong points. So, now it's your turn to show an interest in them. So, if the organisation is, say, a car manufacturer, you need to ask yourself what kind of cars it makes, how they differ from the rest. Read the newspapers for details about their expansion plans, new products and developments, and keep a record of all the important points.
Speaker 2.
Well, employers are, of course, looking for ability, for useful skills. Think carefully of every corner of your daily life for examples of initiative, teamwork, verbal and written communication skills. Remember, for example, when you organised an event at school. Employers want people who get things done, so it's useful to note these down and keep them handy. What I mean is, don't concentrate on the things you feel you're not so good at. If, say, your computer skills are not top of the range, chances are the job will be offered to you anyway, on condition that you do some training to upgrade those skills.
Speaker 3.
You'll have to answer a lot of questions. Interviewers almost always want to know why. Why you did that course. Why you decided not to go to university next year. What kind of leisure activities you like and why. You'll have no trouble answering such questions. Now, it's advisable to be realistic when it comes to talking about your problem areas, maybe skills you haven't quite mastered. Your family and friends may tell you not to worry, but the truth is, you need to be able to show what action you are taking to reach the standard the company requires. You need to be prepared for that.
Speaker 4.
Before you applied for this job, you probably thought carefully about what the company could offer you and what you could give them. Spending long hours reading all their literature won't help you because you may still be unprepared for a question they're likely to ask. What made you choose them? It is worthwhile remembering that, well, say the company's an airline, you're not applying so as to have worldwide travel opportunities. Although, of course, you can express your interest in the travel industry. You need to know what to say, so give it some thought in advance.
Speaker 5.
When you're asked questions, try to avoid giving one-word answers. It's easy to do this when you're a bit nervous. When asked about leisure interests, for example, responses such as reading or sport tell them very little about you. While I'm a member of a rugby club, I'm a drummer in a band, say much more. This also shows more enthusiasm, and the people interviewing you may conclude that you're really very interested in getting this job. It's a good idea to think of what to say and practice your answers with a friend so you can show off all your skills on the day.
Now you'll hear part 3 again. Speaker 1.
When the company invites you to attend an interview, it means that the company is interested in you because they've looked at all the information you've given them about yourself and they probably think you've got a number of strong points. So, now it's your turn to show an interest in them. So, if the organisation is, say, a car manufacturer, you need to ask yourself what kind of cars it makes, how they differ from the rest. Read the newspapers for details about their expansion plans, new products and developments, and keep a record of all the important points.
Speaker 2.
Well, employers are, of course, looking for ability, for useful skills. Think carefully of every corner of your daily life for examples of initiative, teamwork, verbal and written communication skills. Remember, for example, when you organised an event at school. Employers want people who get things done, so it's useful to note these down and keep them handy. What I mean is, don't concentrate on the things you feel you're not so good at. If, say, your computer skills are not top of the range, chances are the job will be offered to you anyway, on condition that you do some training to upgrade those skills.
Speaker 3.
You'll have to answer a lot of questions. Interviewers almost always want to know why. Why you did that course. Why you decided not to go to university next year. What kind of leisure activities you like and why. You'll have no trouble answering such questions. Now, it's advisable to be realistic when it comes to talking about your problem areas. Maybe skills you haven't quite mastered. Your family and friends may tell you not to worry, but the truth is, you need to be able to show what action you are taking to reach the standard the company requires. You need to be prepared for that.
Speaker 4.
Before you applied for this job, you probably thought carefully about what the company could offer you and what you could give them. Spending long hours reading all their literature won't help you, because you may still be unprepared for a question they're likely to ask. What made you choose them? It is worthwhile remembering that, well, say the company's an airline, you're not applying so as to have worldwide travel opportunities. Although, of course, you can express your interest in the travel industry. You need to know what to say, so give it some thought in advance.
Speaker 5.
When you're asked questions, try to avoid giving one-word answers. It's easy to do this when you're a bit nervous. When asked about leisure interests, for example, responses such as reading or sport tell them very little about you. While I'm a member of a rugby club, I'm a drummer in a band, say much more. This also shows more enthusiasm, and the people interviewing you may conclude that you're really very interested in getting this job. It's a good idea to think of what to say and practice your answers with a friend so you can show off all your skills on the day.
That's the end of part 3. Now turn to part 4. You'll hear an interview with Colin Brown, a representative of the Youth Hostel Association, or YHA. For questions 24 to 30, choose the best answer, A, B or C. You now have 1 minute in which to look at part 4.
The Youth Hostel Association started in the 1930s, and since then the organisation has continued to provide low-cost accommodation for millions of people travelling around. I asked Colin Brown, a representative of the YHA, for an update on the hostel situation. Colin, first of all, is it true that the hostels aren't as good as they used to be?
Well, if you're asking me about quality, I'd say, and most would agree with me, that the opposite is the case. The original hostels were pretty tough places to stay in. No hot water, hard floors and beds.
But people argue that hostel travellers don't want fluffy carpets and matching curtains, and that this goes against the original aims of the organisation.
Well, all I can say is that these criticisms have no basis in fact. We know what we're doing. We do market research, we talk to a random selection of people who regularly stay in hostels, and the results show that we're getting it right.
But if you look back to the 30s and 40s, when the organisation started, the general philosophy was very different, wasn't it?
I think the important thing to remember is that we aren't in the 1940s anymore. Teenagers don't travel around on their own as much as they did then, because parents no longer consider it safe. Our hostels are still full, but things have changed. Visitors now are often young families with children, couples on restricted budgets, people who care about the environment and are pretty green.
How has this affected hostel rules and regulations?
Well, we have to market the YHA to be competitive in the 21st century. Rules have become more flexible to accommodate the different types of hostel and their visitors. Sometimes there's no rule about what time you have to be back at night, for example. but not in all hostels. And we still have large, open-plan dormitories, which not everyone wants.
So you've switched really from just offering basic self-service-style accommodation to being more of a service organisation, like a hotel?
Yes, and it's a reflection of what people want. You should see my postbag. For every member who writes to say, it's not like it used to be, we get a pile of letters saying, this is great. If we'd stuck to the old ways, there wouldn't be a YHA. There'd be a few hostels with a small membership of ageing hostelers with no newcomers and no future.
Colin, can we talk a little about rural hostels? Mm. I know you've had to close some of these. How do you decide when to close a hostel?
There are any number of reasons for closing a hostel. Leases run out, buildings become uneconomic, visiting patterns change. The general policy is to consider closing hostels which are significantly below standard, particularly in terms of safety, where the remedial work required would be very expensive.
Mm. It seems odd to be closing them down when I know a lot of companies in this type of business are doing just the opposite.
Mm. It's true. I do get lots of inquiries, more every year, from people who want to set up a hostel or a chain of hostels. And I suppose I do wonder sometimes if we might end up with more hostels than the market can cope with. Take the island of Skye in Scotland, for example. 10 years ago, there were 20 hostels there. Now there are over 500.
Now you'll hear part four again.
The Youth Hostel Association started in the 1930s, and since then the organisation has continued to provide low-cost accommodation for millions of people travelling around. I asked Colin Brown, a representative of the YHA, for an update on the hostel situation. Colin, first of all, is it true that the hostels aren't as good as they used to be?
Well, if you're asking me about quality, I'd say, and most would agree with me, that the opposite is the case. The original hostels were pretty tough places to stay in. No hot water, hard floors and beds.
But people argue that hostel travellers don't want fluffy carpets and matching curtains, and that this goes against the original aims of the organisation.
Well, all I can say is that these criticisms have no basis in fact. We know what we're doing. We do market research, we talk to a random selection of people who regularly stay in hostels, and the results show that we're getting it right.
But if you look back to the 30s and 40s, when the organisation started, the general philosophy was very different, wasn't it?
Mm. I think the important thing to remember is that we aren't in the 1940s anymore. Teenagers don't travel around on their own as much as they did then, because parents no longer consider it safe. Our hostels are still full, but things have changed. Visitors now are often young families with children, couples on restricted budgets, people who care about the environment and are pretty green.
How has this affected hostel rules and regulations?
Well, we have to market the YHA to be competitive in the 21st century. Rules have become more flexible to accommodate the different types of hostel and their visitors. Sometimes there's no rule about what time you have to be back at night, for example, but not in all hostels. And we still have large, open-plan dormitories, which not everyone wants.
So you've switched really from just offering basic self-service-style accommodation to being more of a service organisation, like a hotel?
Yes, and it's a reflection of what people want. You should see my postbag. For every member who writes to say, it's not like it used to be, we get a pile of letters saying, this is great. If we'd stuck to the old ways, there wouldn't be a YHA. There'd be a few hostels with a small membership of ageing hostelers with no newcomers and no future.
Colin, can we talk a little about rural hostels?
Mm.
I know you've had to close some of these. How do you decide when to close a hostel?
There are any number of reasons for closing a hostel. Leases run out, buildings become uneconomic, visiting patterns change. The general policy is to consider closing hostels which are significantly below standard, particularly in terms of safety, where the remedial work required would be very expensive.
It seems odd to be closing them down when I know a lot of companies in this type of business are doing just the opposite.
It's true. I do get lots of inquiries, more every year, from people who want to set up a hostel or a chain of hostels. And I suppose I do wonder sometimes if we might end up with more hostels than the market can cope with. Take the island of Skye in Scotland, for example. 10 years ago, there were 20 hostels there. Now there are over 500.
That's the end of part four. There'll now be a pause of 5 minutes for you to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. I'll remind you when there's 1 minute left so that you're sure to finish in time.